John Brunner calls him consistently the most brilliant science fiction writer in the field. His name is Philip K. Dick, and why science fiction, rather than all the forms of literature you could have chosen? Why SF? Was it a conscious decision?
Yes, there's more latitude in science fiction for the expression of pure ideas than you find in other genres.
Let's get rid of a couple of cliches first. SF is a ghetto. People say, yeah, it's a ghetto, and then on the other hand, they say it's a literature of ideas. All literature is supposed to be a literature of ideas, right? So why is it that science fiction gets tagged with that, and in the same breath is tagged as a ghetto, and people can put it down and pay a lot less money and get a lot less recognition and so forth?
Well, science fiction has changed a lot in the last few years. It's coming out of the ghetto. But all it's done is make it worse. I mean, the writing is worse now that it's coming out of the ghetto. Instead of getting better, it's getting worse because it's losing its identity, it's losing its shape. It's becoming like silly putty. I mean, you can now call anything you want science fiction, or you can decide not to call it science fiction. Like, I have a book coming out, the hardcover edition will be called Mainstream, and the paperback is going to be sold as science fiction. If you buy the hardcover, you're reading a mainstream novel. If you buy the Valentine paperback, you're reading a science fiction novel. But the text is identical in the two. And they're bought simultaneously by Doubleday and Ballantyne, working in tandem. So if I were to talk to you about my novel, I'd have to ask you whether you read the Doubleday edition or the Ballantyne paperback edition. Now, if you read the Ballantyne paperback edition, I'd say, yes, that was a great science fiction novel. And if you read the Doubleday edition, I'd say, well, that was a great mainstream novel, wasn't it, Mike?
You'd
be hard put to figure out how to respond when it's strictly a way of packaging it. We're not talking about packaging and marketing. We're not talking about content at all. Like Sharon Jarvis at Doubleday read the first 80 pages. He says, well, there's no rocket ships in this book. That's not science fiction. I'm going to throw it down the hall to the other editors, the trade editors. Now let them market it. And then Ballantyne looked at the manuscript and said, hot dog, this is wonderful science fiction. We're going to make millions. And then I said, you guys better get together. So I really don't know. I mean, it came out of the... It came out of the ghetto in the hardcover edition, and it went right back into the ghetto in the paperback edition.
Which do you hope sells more, the softcover with the SF tag or Doubleday mainstream?
I hope, oh boy, now you've really put me against the wall. That's a very evil question to ask.
That's right.
Because I can't answer without offending somebody. That is, I have to sit on two stools at once, and I have to... You know, hype the science fiction one, and I have to turn around and hype the mainstream one. I can't fault either one without immediately becoming a victim of my own trap.
Okay, well, let's see if we can rephrase it so it may not offend quite as many people.
I don't want to offend anybody. All right, inoffensive novel will not offend any reader anywhere. No bad words. That's another thing. It could not be published as science fiction by Doubleday because it had four-letter words in it. And their science fiction list does not allow four-letter words in the book. There were too many of them to remove them. If there had only been a few, like in Deus Iri, which they bought from me and Roger Zelazny, there were only a few four-letter words, so they inked them out, and they marketed as science fiction. And I had never known this before. I didn't know that the distinction between science fiction and mainstream was the number of four-letter words. But on this new one of mine, Larry Ashmead, the editor-in-chief at Doubleday, says, you can't take them out. They're necessary to the book. Therefore, we can't market it as science fiction. So we're down to basics now. If you want it marketed as a mainstream novel, you say bleep, bleep all the way through the book. And if you get enough bleep, bleeps in the book, they can't market it as science fiction because they figure most of the science fiction market is kids. You know, this is their theory. This is not my theory. But they're envisioning this audience, but with the thick glasses and the acne, you know, parting the hair in the middle, you know, and the overcoat guy bought at the Salvation Army in a suitcase of old magazines, and he has a felt pen that he wants you to sign every copy of every Astounding that he's got. That's their idea of the science fiction market. That's their idea. That's not my idea.
This is Doubleday, the premier hardcover.
Well, I'm not saying market. I mean Doubleday. I just mean them.
Them. Oh, yeah. The well-known
them. The well-known them. The people that run things.
So that's the distinction. If it's got enough four-letter words, it's not science.
That's right. And that's not what I was told this by an editor-in-chief who is now not with Doubleday. He went over to Simon Schuster. I think that...
their homework. How does he explain, or did you ask him about somebody like Delaney with Dahlgren? Well, definitely SF, and it's got lots of 4 and 10-letter words.
Yeah, that's true. I read part of it. Harlan Ellison, I agree, that's a terrible book. I mean, even though it had a lot of 4-letter and 10-letter words, it was still a terrible book. It should have been marketed as trash, is what it should have been marketed. There's a category, you know, there's trash, just trashy novels.
Sci-fi and trashy novels. Yeah. Okay, why? Why is it a bad book? Is it just...
Oh, it's just a bad book. I don't have to go into that. I mean, it's not necessary that I be a literary critic. I don't know anything about that. That's not my field. I can't criticize. I just read Star Reading, and I said, this is the worst trash I've ever read. And I threw it away. And Harlan did the same thing, sitting up there in Sherman Oaks, where he lives on the pinnacle of that steep hill. Harlan is not in it for profit. Harlan is in it for the ideology of science fiction. He's
done
so much.
Harlan is leaving the field of science fiction.
He
says, I write what I write. Yeah, he's doing his, I write Harlan Ellison stories. They're not science fiction.
That's a tautology. Harlan Ellison writes Harlan Ellison stories. That's you know, the predicate is implied by the subject. I listed the people for Publishers Weekly who had left science fiction recently. I didn't even think to add Harlan. I remember now, I did read Harlan's letter in FNSF, I believe, where he said, America, bleep it or bleep it, regarding science fiction. Barry Maltzberg published the most marvelously crazy statement of the universe in all the history of science fiction. Nobody has ever bum-tripped science fiction as much as Barry Maltzberg did, you know, and I think he's a great writer, but that's not the way, you don't break up a marriage that way, you don't leave science fiction that way, by saying everybody in it is rotten, everything that's ever been written is rotten, except what I wrote. That wasn't rotten, which is what Maltzberg said, but he's going on to bigger and greater things. And then Vonnegut, this is what I said at Published Weekly, Vonnegut has always never written science fiction. He discovered when, upon looking back over his career, discovered he'd made a lot of money at some point, and at that point, retroactively, he, like the Pope, you know, everything I say is true, and I never was writing science fiction. Even if you read Player Piano and you thought it was science fiction, you were wrong. And Cat's Cradle, likewise, and Siren of the Tide. They're not science fiction, because I say they're not science fiction. Come to me, I will tell you. Harlan says, come to me, I will tell you.
Silverberg is also leaving the field.
I know.
Tom Dick.
He's rich. Silverberg's rich.
Well,
I don't know how come he is. I can't figure it out, because none of the rest of us are. I've always asked him that same question over and over again. He just smiles with that sort of superior enigmatic smile of his. And, you know, which means that I know something you don't know, and that's why I'm rich and you're not. He didn't make it off science fiction. I don't believe he made it off selling science fiction. If he did, he sure does know something I don't know. I think he reinvested his royalties in a pizza plant or something.
I don't know why, but there's something about your style of writing and your style, as I discerned it from the Rolling Stone piece, the Paul Williams article, that puts me in mind of Kilgore Trout.
And that's Phil Jose Farmer.
Yeah, right, I know. I mean, I don't mean you are
I don't understand
Kilgore
what you
Trout.
Mean.
I mean
no Kilgore
you're,
Trout.
All right, you do writing which is excellent, and it is labeled science fiction, and therefore it don't sell nothing. It winds up next to the bra and the
wrong
ads.
Wrong. Doubleday gets to market it through their El Cheapo book club. Oh boy, will they love to hear this. But
go
that's
ahead.
True. They get to sell it for $1, and the author makes a penny then, or something trivial like that. His royalties off the entire... Robert Heinlein explained this to me one time. He said, you sell a book to a hardcover publisher, and the Doubleday book club snatches it right up and markets it for $1, no matter how many pages it's got. I mean, we're speaking in hyperbole here, but nevertheless, then your royalties immediately descend down to the minuscule level again. The more copies it sells, the less money you make. Heinlein says that he was financially ruined when they picked up Like Stranger in a Strange Land, I believe it was, one of his recent ones, because they immediately marketed this giant thing for $1. And his royalties, you said, it destroyed the trade edition. He said, it's the worst thing that can happen to you. I always thought it was good when I had a book picked up by the Doubleday Book Club. But I found I made no money. I looked at my royalty sheets. I made no money. That's where the money is, though, you see, is marketing it through like a book club thing. And the publisher makes the money, but the author doesn't. He makes his 10% of the flat price on the trade edition only. And what they do is this. They print up about 2,000 copies of the trade edition. They sell 500 of them, and they pulp the rest the next day. I didn't know that. That was almost enough to leave the field of writing entirely. An editor, two editors told me that this is actually what happens. A hardcover publisher puts out a science fiction novel and pulps his trade edition immediately and turns it over to the book club. So the author looks at his royalty sheet and he says, that's really strange. He says, no matter how good my novel is, it will only sell 2,000 copies. It always stops at 2,000 copies. Because that's at the point that the publisher decided to pulp the edition. I was told that in one of my recent hardcover novels, I won't name the publisher, because this is secondary, chat. I mean, I just have this editor's word for it. After they'd sold 500 copies, they pulped the entire edition. For no reason at all. Except it made it available immediately for subsidiary rights.
What about paperback?
Well, that's the subsidiary. I mean, selling directly the paperback.
Yeah, right.
Well, somebody told me that's where the fat money is. It's selling directly the paperbacks. That was a paperback publisher who told me that. And then they offered me all the money you ever saw in your life to do a novel for them. But when they actually talked specifically, rather than just saying, we'll give you all the money you ever wanted and then some, it turned out to be less than if I sold it to a hardcover house and there was a Doubleday book club edition and then a paperback. So in the paperback, under those conditions, you split the royalties 50-50 with the hardcover publisher. It still turned out to be less, right? Because like in Ubik, I got $10,000 for the paperback, of which I got $5,000, Doubleday got the other five. And, well, like recently, Daw offered me $6,000 to do an original novel for him. And for Daw, $6,000 is like them selling you all the office furniture they've got, including all their computers and things. You know, that's about all the money Daw has is $6,000. If you were to project $6,000 for Daw, say, what would Bantam then pay? Or Dell, who really racked. Like Bantam has 17,500 outlets in the United States that say own 17,500 racks. Isn't that incredible? That's the largest number of racks that any publisher owns in this country. And Daw doesn't own any racks that I know of. I've never seen a Daw rack. And they're up to 6,000.
Are you going to do it? Are you going to write the book for
Daw? Oh, yes. I'm going to have a ball doing it too. It's going to be a lot of fun. Because that's Don Wolheim, and he gave me my start.
That's a good cue to pick up some biographical type stuff. You started when?
51.
51. When you sold your first story. How long had you been writing before you sold your first story?
Ever since I could operate a typewriter, which was when I taught myself to type when I was 12. And I wrote my first novel when I was 14. It was called Return to Lilliput. It was really a bomb. It was terrible. It was the worst novel. I'll sell it someday. I'll find a market for it. It was really neat. They rediscovered Lilliput in the modern world, like rediscovering Atlantis. These guys report they've discovered Lilliput. But it's only accessible by submarine because it's sunk under the water. You think a 14-year-old kid would have a more original idea than that. And I even can tell you the numbers on the submarines. I had to still visit them. It was A101, B202, C303 were the numbers and names of the designations of the submarines.
Makes it a finite number of submarines, then.
Yeah, well, I realized that when I got halfway through. I wasn't thinking ahead.
You sold your first story then to Don Wolheim?
No, to Tony Boucher at FNSF.
That's a hell of a way to begin. That's pretty good. I mean, FNSF in 51 was even so.
Oh, yes. It was the highest class magazine in existence at that time. And what I did was I sent out 13 or 14 stories, and they all came back, including the one I sent to FNSF. Only Tony Boucher said, if you rewrite it along these lines, you will have a worthwhile piece of fiction, because he was the greatest editor, and I mean, he was a great writer, great anthologizer, great editor, great person. And like I had sent him 8,000-9,000 words, and I cut it down to about 2,000 words. That was a story called Rogue, and it's still in print. It's still in print now. It's in print in a text for high school students.
It's in paperback, in one of your, a paperback collection of short stories, the only collection of short stories I've ever seen.
It's in the preserving machine?
I think it is.
It's also, Silverberg picked it up. It's, in other words, it's still in print. It's all these years later, 25, 26 years later. And I'm still getting money off the darn thing. It's really weird. I'm still making money off stuff I wrote, when I was just starting. They're still in print, those early stories of mine. But then I hit a bad part of my career. About 1954, when I started writing the worst scratchy stuff you ever, none of that stuff's in print.